shocking story of boy crazy girls, then gun crazy guys.
What makes you think you can get away with it?
Let us worry about that, bud.
I'm through for the night, Mac. I'll be on my...
The most feared of our modern underworld. Men who hate the law and abuse even those they love.
So what's with him?
Hey, shot his first cop.
Siren-screaming, bullet-blazing thriller, Jailbait.
Okay, are we rolling? Good. Forgotten Horrors Podcast, take one. Do the appropriate music. No. I said the appropriate music. That's more like it. This is Mike Price, welcoming you to the Forgotten Horrors Podcast. A blatant exploitation of our new series of Forgotten Horrors movie books, and especially Forgotten Horrors Volume 5, The Atom Age, by John Woolley, Jan Allen Henderson, and yours truly. It is my pleasure now to introduce John Woolley, without whom none of this would be possible. And now, the acclaimed author of Soul Soup for the Chickens and others too humorous to mention, John Woolley.
Thank you very much, Michael H. Price, and we're here to talk about, tonight, to talk about an Ed Wood film, which, and I'm going to just go ahead and start out asking you, or posing this question, Michael, because I got, one of my Christmas gifts I got was Dolores Fuller's autobiography, A Fuller Life, from Bear Manor Press. I don't know if you've read it or not.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen that. I kind of got burned out on Ed Wood and his circle when we were working on the last few Forgotten Horrors books.
It'll happen. but this was an interesting book, among other things. I mean, she talked about being involved in Tanya Tucker's early career, which I think was pretty interesting. No one would put Ed Wood and Tanya Tucker 2 degrees of separation. But what she said was she believed that Jailbait was the best film Ed Wood made, and that was the kind of film he could have made had he had the backing that he could have stood up against any filmmaker making these sorts of pictures. She sang the praises of Jailbait.
I wonder
what you think about her estimation of the picture.
Well, I'm sure she's got a very strong favorable bias, and it is comparatively a better Wood film. It's also got the problems of self-indulgence that afflict every one of his pictures.
Can you give me a for instance?
Glenn or Glenda.
Uh-huh.
Self-indulgent. The refusal to accept or seek editing.
Mm-hmm.
The belief that the first take is always the one, and certainly that willingness to call it perfect when it's like a first draft.
Right.
I know the feeling. You know, I get a good scald on some manuscript and think, wow, this is going to do it just fine. And then you go back and read, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
Spontaneity is a good thing, but it must be tempered with control, that is self-control, and the willingness to accept outside control.
Mm-hmm.
The aesthetic failings that afflict practically all Wood pictures, like the failure to do the idiot check when getting ready to shoot the set.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in the range of the camera that would distract the viewer, as opposed to tell the story? There is an abnormally huge office desk.
I was getting ready to mention that. Yes, in the doctor's office, right? Yeah,
which is like what? this is like a bank president's desk. What it's like, and people go into this cramped room, cramped mainly because of that damn desk,
mm-hmm.
and have to squeeze around it. And then there's somebody puts some set dresser who's probably not credentialed to do set dressing, puts a potted plant in the way. And you know, it's like specifically about Jailbait, many examples. The music is intrusive,
and throughout the entire picture,
it's over emotional, yeah. mm-hmm. which can be good. You know, I mean, over emotional. I can listen to Muddy Waters all day, mm-hmm. and he's mm-hmm. as over emotional, as bathotic as a reviewer once said, and you get that same. But Muddy Waters is a master mm-hmm. in what he does,
mm-hmm.
and you can forgive him his self indulgences because he's really telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
Music to movies is not necessarily an apt comparison, but what works in one idiom always works in most other communicative idioms. You know, how about this use of a living room couch for an operating
mm-hmm,
table?
Mm-hmm. That's true. And you know, the music, if we can go back to that, it's ubiquitous. I mean, there is not a scene where you don't have that flamenco guitar and the piano just going on and on.
Cluttering up my place. I want him out of here.
You better shut that trap of yours or you'll be joining him.
And maybe that made it, maybe he thought that made it sound a little bit, you know, more expensive or something. I don't know. Or like gave production value of some sort.
A piano is not necessarily the right scoring device for all movies.
Right.
Except when used in, case in point, The Colossus of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Which used a piano score not because of low budgetitis, but because the musicians' union was on strike.
Right, right. Yes, sure.
And it worked, and they did this lovely pyrotechnical piano underscoring. But anytime I hear kettle drums or a flamenco guitar or most pianos in a movie, I think this better be incidental music.
Well, another thing that Dolores Fuller writes about, and she's, and God bless her, I really wanted her to be good in this, and she's not very good in it. But another thing she talks about is she was very upset that they changed the original title of the film from The Hidden Face, because she thought that Jailbait insinuated underage girls rather than, of course, the line that someone says, don't take that gun out, it's jailbait. And so she thought that The Hidden Face would have been a much better title.
Well, yeah, and it's got a, and it's she probably has a valid point. Jailbait means one thing.
Right.
And why try to fake it,
yeah.
Including manipulating dialogue so that it reflects the imposed title. The Hidden Face, and there is a bit in common with a Depression period picture in that respect called Let 'Em Have It.
Let 'Em Have It, right. With Robert Armstrong, is that right?
No, that's the one with Bruce Cabot.
Bruce Cabot, that's right.
That's the one with Bruce Cabot,
mm-hmm.
Who plays so soon after taking the heroic lead in King Kong, he turns right around and does two of the most vicious public enemies you've ever seen, one in Let 'Em Have It, and then in another similarly conceived picture called Show Them No Mercy.
Well, we should say that thing between Let 'Em Have It, the similarity between Let 'Em Have It and Jailbait, has to do with a plastic surgeon altering the face of a gangster.
Altering the face.
Yeah.
And is it a botched operation or is it a
deliberately botched operation? And interesting you should mention that because according once again to Dolores Fuller, and I've just read the book so it's all fresh on my mind, she mm-hmm. said that Alex Gordon, who of course went on to do quite a little bit with AIP and different people, who was Wood's roommate at one point before Dolores moved in, that he was given, that Ed was generously gave him screenplay and story credit. And she claims the only thing that Alex Gordon did was tell Ed about a film called Let Him Have It. So there you go. Now, I kind of think that maybe Alex Gordon had a little bit more to do with it than that, because there are stretches of competence in the picture.
Oh, yeah. There's no shortage of Gordon touches. And of course, Alex and his Englishman brother, they
yes.
grew up in
Richard,
in London. Yes,
yeah.
but Richard and Alex both had... they were kind of like low-rent Korda brothers.
Yeah, okay, that's a good analogy, yeah.
Not unlike that, and I think Alex probably had a lot more to do with what's good or tolerable about Jailbait than Ed Wood did. But Ed Wood is a signature director. You can spot his touches anywhere, even when he's not directing.
Well, that's true. That's exactly
as
right.
I believe took pains to point out on the very first Forgotten Horrors podcast.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about Orgy of the Dead. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is also that there may be the mark, and no one really talks about this, but I don't think I knew this until I read Dolores Fuller's book. Ron Ormond was basically the supervising producer, was sent up by Joy Houck and his partner, what's his name, that had the J. Francis White and Joy Houck.
The Houck
International. And that Ron Ormond was sent up there, which would explain why that goofy minstrel show scene from Yes, Sir, Mr. Bones is in it.
I was going to ask if your print had that minstrel show
scene. It did have the minstrel show scene in it.
Oh.
And it kind of apropos of nothing, but that's from a Ron Ormond film.
Yes, and that's a very unfortunate throwback.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, it's got some figures of historical importance. The fellow who does the blackface routine, Cotton Watts, was one of the last old school white imitating black minstrel entertainers.
Right, burnt cork guys. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, and many other elements of historical importance in Yes, Sir, Mr. Bones, including the work of Flournoy Miller, who had been Mantan Moreland's stage partner.
Right, right. But as stripped of all of that, which I understand, Yes, Sir, Mr. Bones is essentially a flashback sequence where some old guys talk about what it was like in the minstrel show days. But, of course, all of that's gone with they drive to a theater, and I guess we're supposed to assume that that this minstrel show is being done in this theater. And it's obviously, very obviously, a part of a completely different picture.
Right.
But there's a couple of other things, and again, I'm going by what Dolores Fuller said, and I think I've read this other places, that the Herbert Rawlinson part, the doctor, who's Dolores Fuller's dad, was supposed to be Bela Lugosi. And it was because Lugosi could not get out of his contract at the Silver Slipper in Las Vegas, where he was doing the Bela Lugosi review, which I think, Michael, was written by Ed Wood. I'm not sure about that.
I believe that's correct. the Herbert Rawlinson, of course, he and Rawlinson and Lugosi were contemporaries.
Yes.
And Rawlinson figures in, quite a good number of the Forgotten Horrors.
Yes, he does. He sure does.
Going way back into the 30s and had been not Lugosi-style typecast, but very much typecast as a figure of heroic maturity and authority and all that. Yeah, Lugosi was struggling to stay visible.
Right.
And he made some unfortunate connections. I think probably Ed Wood was the most misfortunate of his connections.
Well, whoever it was, and allegedly, again, according to Dolores Fuller, Ed helped him get the job with the Silver Slipper in Vegas, and he did so well with the review, it was held over, and that's why he couldn't take the gig, and Herbert Rawlinson ended up, of course, poor Herbert Rawlinson had emphysema at the time, and you can, one of the saddest parts of the picture is hearing, I mean, as professional a guy as he was, you couldn't help but hear him wheeze between scenes.
Yeah.
And the legend is, and I know it was very soon after the picture was finished, but the legend is he died the morning after he finished the picture. I know that he died very quickly after that picture was done, died of emphysema, but you couldn't, except for the wheezing, you couldn't really tell it. I mean, he was really a trooper.
He carries it with authority. Yeah,
and
well,
he carries it with authority.
Lugosi and the Silver Slipper. But there's another thing Lugosi would have in common with Boris Karloff.
That's true.
You know why Raymond Massey took the Jonathan part in
Arsenic
Frank Capra's Arsenic and Old Lace?
No, I don't. Was,
the part had been written for Karloff.
Yes.
And has a spoken reference to Karloff. Karloff couldn't do the picture for Capra because he was stuck in the Broadway version of Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, really?
He could have gotten out of it, but he decided to do the right thing and stick. And, of course, the picture didn't get released until quite some time later after Arsenic had finished its run on Broadway.
Well, I have to tell you, if I can do a quick insertion here, you may be hearing train noise outside. I want to let the listeners know that's because Joey and Emily, our producer Joey Hambrick, has moved close to a train track. And we started thinking about whether or not we want to just cut it when the trains came through, just let the ambiance go. So we want to let the folks know it's just the ambient train in Rogers County, Oklahoma. But there's a pretty good cast here, Michael. I mean, Lyle Talbot done good work. Timothy Farrell did like the bottom of the Z picture exploitation pictures, but he was a very reliable guy. And then there's Steve Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
4 years before Hercules made him a star, and it wasn't his first film, but it was his first billed film where he got screen credit. He'd actually been in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes a year earlier as one of the Olympic team in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. But this
then he
was
gets
his
a little muscle man showcase.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, he did. But this was his first credited role. And again, according to Dolores Fuller, they had a love scene where he kissed her. And it was cut out of the final print because it wasn't her theory, of course, which is probably not, maybe not correct, but that he was not passionate because he knew that she was Ed Wood's woman and he didn't want to do that. So I find that a little hard to believe, but, you know, maybe, who knows. But anyway, he was the basically male, you know, the protagonist, I guess, along
right,
with Lyle
yeah.
Talbot. He and Lyle Talbot being the two detectives that investigate this. And, you know, they don't do a bad job. And it is, there are long stretches of the movie that look pretty good and sound pretty good. There's still some pretty ham-handed
dialogue. I have no objection to the film. We can pick out flaws all day long and
right.
still really not detract from the pleasure of watching an Ed Wood film. I say pleasure really without qualification,
right.
because part of the pleasure of watching an Ed Wood film is getting annoyed by it.
Right, that's right. As odd as that may sound, that's absolutely right. And this
you
is
know,
probably,
I mean,
yeah.
You give the guy his due. He thought he was doing something good. He did not have any conventional dramatic bearings or technical bearings.
And even more importantly, I think, he did it. You know,
oh, yeah.
And that's sometimes what people forget. And it's easy. You and I both know, Michael, having worked both sides of the street, you've made movies, you've reviewed movies. You know how easy it is in 15 minutes to tear down something that a lot of people worked for weeks and weeks to make. And, you know, the balance, somehow the cosmic balance has never quite been right to me, because a lot of the people who criticize even someone like Ed Wood don't know what it takes to just get a film off the ground.
That's
any
right.
film.
And really nobody, unless maybe the artist is Lloyd Kaufman, nobody really sets out to make a bad picture.
Right, Right, and then you get into the Susan Sontag thing, don't you, about how intentional camp is much worse than unintentional camp.
Exactly.
And,
when you force the issue.
That's right.
Yeah, just let it happen, and who cares if somebody razzes you?
Right. And, you know, I may have said this, before on one of these podcasts, but I knew and Clu Gulager fairly well for a time, and what a nice man, and he and his wife both. They lived in Tulsa for a time, and Miriam. And one time I was talking to him, and I said, you know, what... For instance, I was talking about Return of the Living Dead, and I said, when you've got those bags of human body parts that are writhing in the trash sacks, and taking them over to, was it James Caron that's got the crematorium? And when he asks what's in the bags, and you say, weasels, rabid weasels, I said, how do you approach, because Clu was very, very smart about his craft and very thoughtful about his craft. And I said, you know, how do you approach that? He says, it has to be non-specific acting. He says, you just do the lines. You can't be winking at the audience. You can't be acting like you know you're better than material. You can't be acting like this is just some sort of campy romp. You have to take it straight.
And I can take that picture straight right up to the. Everybody gets killed, Dynamite.
Right, exactly. Sure, exactly. So I think, you know, they're taking, you know, it takes a lot, and Ed Wood was nothing if not sincere about his pictures.
Oh, yeah. And it's like Teddy Roosevelt said, it's not the audience that matters, it's the guy in the arena.
The guy in the arena. That's exactly right. And he was in the, for better or worse, he was in the arena. And he did it. I mean, the people that do the books that excoriated him, that brought him to prominence in a kind of a negative way, and we know who we're talking about here, they haven't done it. They didn't do it. They'll never do it. They don't have the cojones to do it, to try
it. Exactly.
And, you know, so I think Ed Wood deserves some, you know, some credit and some, you know, validation for that. And even a film like this, which... You know, you can pick it apart, as you said. It's pretty easy to pick apart. Dolores Fuller is not good in it. There's some very clunky dialogue and exposition. There's bad choices, like the giant desk in the office. But it's still a movie that got made against all odds, because you and I both know that making a movie, because we both had movies made, making a movie is like opening a safe. You've got to have all the tumblers fall at the same time, and if one hangs up, it doesn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it done through dint of raw willpower. A lot of times, he got it done. And I mean, there's something.
Well,
to be said
I think
about.
I really do. And yeah, I go back and look at pictures I've worked on. I'm sure you've done the same, and you're constantly saying, hey, I wish I'd done that different.
Yeah.
I wish I'd done that different.
Absolutely.
And I think it might be a blessing to have Ed Wood's ultra confidence.
I think it might be too. It would certainly, it's, you know, it's ignorance is bliss in some ways. I mean, ignorance in terms of, you know, what is stacked against you when you're trying to make a picture. You know, you're ignorant of those things.
Like Jackie DeShannon said, don't doubt yourself, baby.
Don't doubt yourself, baby. That's right. Well, Joey has asked me to talk to the audience for a moment. And if anyone has a copy of any of the Forgotten Horrors books, any of our books, your books that I've been privileged to help you on a few of. Boy, that was a terrible sentence, wasn't it? Not only did I end that with a preposition, it just never really got started. But,
we'll just charge you an extra syntax.
That's exactly right. But if anyone has a copy of a Forgotten Horrors book, what Joey would like for them to do, and what we would like for them to do too, is to take a photo of themselves, him or herself, with the book, put it on Instagram with the hashtag Forgotten Horrors Podcast. Will, or what's the other place that we need to put it, Joey? On the Forgotten Horrors web? No, Facebook page. Thank you.
Facebook page.
On the Facebook page. If you do that, then and I don't think I've run this by you, Michael, so this is going to be a surprise to you. But if they do that, if a person does that, then they can call a film that they would like for us to talk about.
Great idea.
Now, we will try and honor all requests, but Joe and I were talking about there were certain films, I suspect for you too, that we would just have to draw a veil across. So that's
yeah, it's like, no, I'm not doing 1 million AC/DC.
That's kind of what we were thinking about as well. So, but we would like for you to do that. So all you have to do is just get a picture of yourself in a Forgotten Horrors book, one of our books, one of Michael's books, or one of the ones that I help Michael with on Amazon. Hold it up, yeah. And then once you're on there, then you can tell us what film you would like for us to talk about next.
Yeah, definitely.
And speaking of next, we've got one coming up for April that we're going to be talking about a little bit later on that has to do with Frederick Brown, the writer. Heavily underrated writer, from my way of thinking.
One of my favorites, and a pulp master that I often revisit, even though I know the stuff largely by heart.
Yes,
he's a great storyteller.
A great storyteller, and also very off trail. Angle of vision was very different.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Anybody who's ever seen the movie version of the Screaming Mimi,
yes,
knows what we're talking about.
Or read the book. Oh my, that's really something. So we'll be doing that in a couple of weeks, and we don't want to give it away, but we'll be announcing a little bit of a kind of a tie-in we're going to be doing then. But we've still got one coming up for next month, which is March. I guess we can do this, can't we, Joey? We can have it. I mean, we can say March and all of this. Okay, all right, good. Do you have any ideas? I know you love your 30s pictures. You got any idea of one we might want to do next?
Well, I've been revisiting the Depression period a lot, and I have become re-enamored of a Lionel Barrymore picture from the early 30s called Guilty Hands.
Can you give us a little bit of a little bit of a synopsis of what it's like?
A crime drama, but modeled after, in many ways, modeled after George du Maurier's Svengali about the controlling male and the mm-hmm. innocent woman.
Oh, nice!
And the devoted father who decides he's going to remove this bad influence.
Nice.
And it's just a lovely picture, and you get to wondering whether the heroic father is even more of a monster than the brute he sets out to destroy.
Always like those kinds of pictures.
Oh yeah.
Now, who put it? Was it a major studio? I must have been.
That's MGM.
Barrymore, MGM. Yeah. It would have been MGM.
Yeah, MGM. Barrymore was one of the fixtures at MGM.
Yes.
And much more generally gifted, and much more dependable than his brilliant but erratic brother John.
Right. Uh-huh.
And more devoted to the cinema than either John or Ethel Barrymore. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. Kay Francis, Lionel Barrymore, just a knockout of a picture, and it especially dates well because it occurs before the big censorship purge of 1934.
And we like those pictures from that era, from 30 through 34, those talkies, wonderful.
Right.
And got away with an awful lot that some can even be shocking today when you think about something like Freaks, for instance.
Oh, mercy, yes. Yeah.
Jail Bait, and the only thing I didn't take down was the name of Dolores Fuller's, the guy who plays Dolores Fuller's brother. I believe this was his only role. I read somewhere where he was actually Ed Wood's grocery delivery boy.
And, oh, you mean Clancy Malone.
Clancy Malone, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So yeah. Clancy Malone is, to summarize, Dolores Fuller's brother. They are both Herbert Rawlinson's children, Herbert Rawlinson being a respected doctor. And the brother falls in with some bad people. Of course, when you see Timothy Carey, did I say Timothy Carey? I don't mean Timothy Carey, do I? I mean Timothy Farrell. Falls in with Timothy Farrell, and you know bad things are going to happen, and sure enough, they do. And it's an interesting picture, and it's even with the... the odd insertion of the minstrel show footage, it's still a pretty short picture, and it plays. I think it plays pretty well.
Oh sure, yeah. I mentioned earlier. I think that I've had a little Ed Wood burnout working mm-hmm. on the 1950s volumes of Forgotten Horrors
sure.
in recent years, but you know, the guy exerts a certain fascination.
Mm-hmm. He does. I've heard it described as when you watch one of his pictures, you feel that you're on the edge of a subterranean universe.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there's nothing wrong with that. You know,
maybe case notes from an asylum.
There you go.
I don't know.
Well, until next month, Michael, thank you very much. I enjoyed visiting
Delighted.
With you. We'll be doing it again soon. And for Forgotten Horrors and for our producer, Joey Hambrick, I'm John Woolley. That's Michael H. Price. Thank you very much for listening. Tell your friends who might be interested. Don't tell the ones who might not be.